On Taita's advice, Nefer had established a screen of scouts along the shores of the Red Sea to report any invasion by Dhows. Yet Taita was certain that Naja's main invasion force would come through the Great Sand Desert. Naja and Trok had passed this way on their Mesopotamian adventure. Naja knew the route well, and his army was too large to bring across the Red Sea in boats, as Trok had done with his much smaller force. Thanks to a marvellous innovation by the Magus, Nefer and his staff knew the exact numbers and composition of Naja's muster. One of the centurions, high in the chain of Naja's command, who was an old associate of Taita and who owed him a debt of gratitude, had sent a message to Taita declaring his loyalty to the pharaoh Nefer-Seti and his intention of defecting and coming to join Nefer's army. Through another of his minions, a trader in fine carpets, who was leading a caravan to Beersheba, Taita had sent the centurion a reply instructing him to remain at the head of his legion. "You are more valuable to us as a source of intelligence than as a warrior," he had told him, and through the carpet trader had sent him two unusual gifts, a basket of live pigeons and a papyrus scroll on which was set out a secret code. When the pigeons were released by the centurion, they returned immediately to the coop in Avaris in which they'd been hatched, and they carried with them, tied to one leg with a silken thread, a coded message written on a tiny roll of the finest and lightest papyrus sheet. Through these messages, Nefer had in his possession the precise numbers and disposition of the troops Naja commanded. He knew the exact day in which Naja had marched from Babylon, and how many troops he had left there under Asmor. Nefer was able to follow his advance westward, through Damascus and Beersheba, and all the other towns and garrisons along his line of march. Very soon it became apparent that Taita had assessed the situation correctly, and that Naja would not attempt a surprise crossing of the Red Sea. He was, indeed, intent on a frontal assault through the Great Sand Desert. Nefer pulled in his pickets from along the Red Sea coast, and immediately moved his headquarters and most of his army forward to the frontier garrison of Ismailia on the edge of the desert. Here there were bountiful sweet water wells and ample grazing for the horses. While they waited in Ismailia, reports continued to be carried in by the returning pigeons. Not only did Nefer know Naja's strength, he knew also who commanded each of his divisions. Mintaka sat on his war council in the fort of Ismailia. Her contributions were invaluable. She was Hyksos-born, and knew well those officers on Naja's staff who had once been on her own father's staff. As a child, she'd listened to her father's assessment of each of them, and she had a formidable memory, trained and sharpened over the Bayo board. She was able to advise Nefer on the strengths, weaknesses, and personal peculiarities of each of these men. She went over the lists they'd received. "Now, this one, Centurion Pren, who commands Naja's rearguard, is related to me, for he was one of my father's cousins. I know him well. He taught me to ride. I used to call him Uncle Tonka, which means bear in my language." She smiled at the memory. "My father said of him that he was loyal as a hound, cautious and slow, but once he'd sunk his teeth into the throat of an enemy, he'd hang on to the death." By this time, Meron had almost fully recovered his health and his strength. He begged Nefer for employment in some useful role, so Nefer sent him forward with a division of chariots to cover Naja's further advance once he came down from the heights into the desert. Meron's scouts watched Naja's water carts carrying their loads of clay jars forward and building up the dumps in the arid land through which Naja must pass to reach the frontier of Egypt. Meron asked to be allowed to attack and disperse the convoys of water carts, but Nefer sent orders to him not to interfere with them, merely to keep them under observation and to note carefully where they placed the water stores. Then Nefer ordered the last reserves he'd been holding on the river to be brought up, and when these were encamped around Ismailia, he called a council of all their commanders. "Even with Trok's vehicles that we captured at Galala, Naja outnumbers us by almost 3 to 1, he told them. All his men are battle-hardened, and his horses trained and in fine condition. We cannot afford to let him cross the frontier and reach the river. We must meet him and fight him here in the desert. All that night they sat in council, and Nefer laid out his battle plan and issued his orders. They were to let Naja advance unopposed for the first 5 days. Then, once he was deeply committed, they would raid and destroy his water stores, both in front and to the rear of his advance. This would trap him in the midst of the sands. I know Naja well enough to stake the battle on his arrogance and his overbearing confidence in his own fighting skills. I'm certain that even once we cut off his water supply, he'll not turn back, but will thrust onwards. His forces will reach Ismailia after a forced dry march of many days through the desert. We'll be able to meet him, with our horses and troops well rested and watered, on a battleground of our own choosing. This will make up some of the deficits in our opposing strengths. During the long council, Taita sat silently in the shadows behind Nefer's campaign stool. It seemed that he was dozing, but once in a while he opened his eyes, then, blinking like a sleepy owl, closed them again and let his chin droop back on his chest. "Our greatest lack is in the number and condition of our chariots," Nefer went on. "But we can almost match Naja in archers, slingers, and spearmen. I'm certain that once he realizes his shortage of water, Naja will drive ahead of his foot soldiers with all his chariots. Taita and I have devised a plan to lead his vehicles into a trap in which we can exploit the small advantage that we have. In front of the town and the wells, we'll throw up a series of low stone walls behind which our archers and infantry can conceal themselves. These works will be just high enough to block the advance of a chariot." With a charcoal stick, Nefer sketched out a design on the sheet of papyrus spread on the tabletop in front of him. Hilto, Shabako, Sokko, and the rest of his staff craned forward to watch. "The walls will be laid out in the design of a fish trap." He drew the inverted funnel shapes, with the apex aimed back towards the fort of Ismailia.
"How will you lead them into the funnel?" Shabako asked.
"With a charge of our own chariots and the mock retreat you've practiced so often," Nefer explained. "Our archers and slingers will remain concealed behind the walls until Naja follows us into the funnel. The deeper they penetrate, the more tightly his squadrons will be compressed between the walls. They'll offer a fine target for our slingers and archers as they pass at close range." Even Shabako looked impressed.
"You intend to shut them up in a stockade like cattle, just as you did with Trok?"
They discussed the plan with enthusiasm, offering suggestions and refinements. In the end, Nefer put Shabako in charge of building the walls. Taita had spent the last 5 days surveying and marking them out for him, so the work could begin as soon as it was light the next day. "We have little time left to us," Nefer warned them. "We know that Naja's forces are already drawn up on the heights of the Hatmir. His water wagons have almost finished laying down the dumps. I expect he'll begin his descent of the escarpment within days." The council broke up at last, and the officers hurried away to take up the tasks that Nefer had allocated to them. At last only three remained in the tower room of the old fort at Ismailia: Nefer, Taita, and Mintaka. Mintaka spoke up for the first time. "We've discussed already Pren, my uncle Tonka," she said, and Nefer nodded but gave her a quizzical look. "If I could meet him, if I could speak to him face to face, I'm sure I could convince him to turn against Naja and throw in his lot with us."
"What do you mean?"
Nefer's voice was harsh and his expression stern.
"Dressed as a boy, with a small detachment of good men and fast horses, I could circle round Naja's main army and get through to Uncle Tonka in the rear. There would be little risk."
Nefer's face blanched with anger. "Madness," he said quietly.
stark, raving madness of the kind you exhibited at Galala when you showed yourself as bait to Truk. I will not hear another word of it. Can you imagine what Naja would do to you if you fell into his hands? Can you imagine what Naja would do if, in the critical moment of the battle, Uncle Tonker and his legions fell upon him from his own rear? She flashed back at Neffer. We will not speak of it again. Neffer came to his feet and slammed his fists down on the tabletop. You will stay here with Merikara, in the fort, for the rest of the campaign. If you do not give me your word to put such stupidity out of your mind, I'll have the door of your chamber barred and guarded. You cannot treat me as a chattel. Her voice crackled with fury. I'm not even your wife. I will take no orders from you. I am your king, and I demand your solemn word not to place yourself in jeopardy with this wild scheme of yours. It's not a wild scheme, and I will not give you my word. Taeta looked on, expressionless. This was their first serious argument, and he knew it would be all the more bitter because of the depth of their feelings for each other. He waited with interest to see how it would be resolved. You deliberately disobeyed my orders at Galala. I cannot trust you not to do the same now. You leave me no alternative, Neffer told her grimly, and shouted to the sentry outside the door to send for Zugga, the head eunuch of the royal harem. I can't trust Merikara either, he turned back to Mintaka. She's completely under your influence, and if you put your mind to it, you'll turn her to this lunatic enterprise of yours. I'm sending you both back to the Zenana in the Avaris Palace. You're to remain there in the care of Zugga. We can amuse each other by playing Beo until the battle is fought and the war is won. And Zugga led Mintaka away. At the door she looked back over her shoulder at Neffer, and Taeta smiled as he read her expression. Neffer had taken on a more stubborn adversary than both the false pharaohs combined. That evening Taeta went to visit her in the new accommodation that Mintaka now shared with Merikara, in what had once been the commander's suite of the fort. A pair of large, placid eunuchs were at the door, and another outside the barred window. Mintaka was still seething with anger, and Merikara was every bit as outraged by her brother's treatment of herself and her dear Mintaka, and especially this humiliating incarceration. At least you have learned from this that it does not pay to confront a king, even if he loves you. Taeta told them gently. I don't love him, Mintaka replied, with tears of anger and frustration in her eyes. He treats me like a child, and I hate him. I hate him even more, Merikara declared, not to be outdone. If only Merin were here. Has it occurred to you that what Neffer is doing for you is evidence of his love and concern for your safety? Taeta suggested. He knows how dire will be your fate if you fall into the hands of Naja Kiafan and Heseret. They turned upon him so roundly that he held up both hands to deflect their wrath and withdrew tactfully, their denials and recriminations still ringing in his ears. The next morning both Neffer and Taeta watched from the ramparts of the fort as the little caravan left Ismailia, escorted by the eunuchs and a contingent of chariots, and headed back towards Avaris. Mintaka and Merikara were closeted together behind the silk curtains of the litter in the centre of the column. They did not show themselves or take their farewells of Neffer and Taeta. Personally, I would have preferred to stir up a beehive with a short stick, Taeta murmured. It may have made for a more restful climate to have shown a little more tact. They must learn that I am Pharaoh, that my word is law even to them. Besides, at the moment I have other concerns than female tantrums, Neffer said. They'll get over it. But he stayed on the wall and watched until the swaying litter and the caravan disappeared in the hazy distance.